Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of The Help Side, the Basketball Strategy and Analytics Podcast. I am your host, John Jansen, and I would like to start off by saying that I apologize for the delay since the last time we recorded. I went on a bachelor party in Austin, Texas for one of my good friends about 2 weeks ago, and on a side note, it was amazing. There was 10 guys. We stayed in this Airbnb on a lake. It was like $100 a night for each person because of $1,000 for the Airbnb divided by 10. So it was like super affordable. Austin is one of the top two or three destinations for bachelorette parties. And it was crazy. There was like a bachelorette party every 5 feet. So if you're going on a bachelor party and you want some fun, if you're going on a bachelor party, it's a pretty good place to go. We really enjoyed ourselves. Needless to say, I got really sick when I came back. So if I cough, I apologize. I'll try to edit it out. But definitely got sick for a good week and just kind of recovering now and still kind of at the tail end of that. So anyway, we're back and a lot to talk about today. I want to first start off by talking about what has gone on in the NBA since last we talked. You know, last time we talked about LeBron going to the Lakers and all this, and since then they've signed Rondo, Beasley, Lance Stephenson, and JaVale McGee, and I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit. It's really interesting because Lance Stephenson is an okay three-point shooter, but not great, and obviously Rondo's not really a three-point shooter, although he shoots okay from the corners. So it's going to be really interesting in two ways. I mean, if you put those four guys standing by themselves, you say, all right, this is the hood team, or this is, you know, just guys that aren't franchise players, guys that have had problems in one place or another for one reason or another, and now you're putting them all on the same team. And I think that's a concern, but I think LeBron really equalizes out or balances out all of that just with his presence, because when he walks in that locker room, I think he demands, you know, the fact that we're not going to be screwing around. He demands that we're going to work a little harder. He's going to be the hardest working guy out there, and I think guys are going to see that, and they want to be a part of that. You know, they don't want to be the guy LeBron doesn't like, the guy LeBron tries to get traded or something because he's not pulling his weight. So I think in the right culture, and I know that word is the most overused word in sports probably, but in the right situation, a lot of guys can change. I mean, we look at J.R. Smith. He was a pretty good soldier for the last few years in Cleveland with LeBron. You look at JaVale McGee, who was basically known as a clown for most of his career. He was fine, and he was really valuable, I thought, in Golden State. His defense and his ability to just kind of hang out around the basket and clean up and get those alley-oops and stuff like that. And even Nick Young, you know, he was fine on Golden State, and he's one of the biggest clowns in the NBA. I can't stand him. And he was fine with Golden State this past year. He still loves to smile and celebrate every time he makes one shot, even though that's his job, but that's a different rant for a different day. So you put these guys on the same team, and you know they're veterans now. So you would hope that a lot of that messing around and a lot of that other stuff is behind those guys. Beasley to me is probably someone the Lakers just signed just because it was cheap, and if he's not worth it, if he's just not any good anymore, then they'll just waive him or just sit him on the back of the bench or something like that. And if he's okay, then it's a bonus, you know. And then you have JaVale, who I said was really good for Golden State, and then Lance Stephenson, who is a veteran, and he works hard. You know, he had that little bad spell there for a couple years where he was almost out of the league. And then last year he was good in Indiana again, and he's a good player. He works hard, and I think with LeBron, those two will be good leaders for that team. The scary part for me with that team is, well, there's two things. Number one is Luke Walton. I just don't think that a young coach can handle what they have or what they're trying to build there. I think you need a veteran coach because you need someone that, number one, LeBron respects. And I don't understand why LeBron would respect Luke Walton. Luke Walton's done nothing as a coach. He did nothing as a player. And it's just, he just basically got the job because he subbed in for Steve Kerr when he was hurting and had those surgeries and had those problems. So he doesn't really have the credibility to me. And why would he tell LeBron? And I think when things go badly, I think LeBron will just walk all over him and tell him what to do, and that's not good. And I think that's a lot of what happened in Cleveland and why Tyronn Lue ultimately lost LeBron, because, you know, he just, you saw Kyrie go to Boston and immediately talk about having a real coach and all this other stuff. And with these young coaches, sometimes you just, it's an experience. We all know it's experience. You know, your first year as a coach, your second year as a coach, your third year, your fourth year as a coach, you're still learning so much. And LeBron doesn't need a coach who's still learning. He needs a coach who understands what's going to happen and what they're getting themselves into and is ready for that. And who's able to manage all of these young players. Because besides for those four, it's pretty much all really, really young guys. And there needs to be a veteran voice to keep those guys in line and keep those guys grinding it out all season long. And the other part that worries me is their lack of perimeter shooting. You know, a lot of teams with LeBron James are created around LeBron James with a lot of shooters and rebounders and, you know, guys like that who complement the way he plays. Well, you have Lonzo Ball and you have Rajon Rondo. How can you play those three guys together at the same time? Even two of those guys. If you have LeBron James in the game and Rajon Rondo or Lonzo Ball is in the game, I'm telling my guy that's guarding those guys, if he's on the perimeter, you stand with 1 foot in the paint, 1 foot out of the paint, and you play LeBron's drive. And when LeBron comes towards you, you double team, and we're going to make Lonzo hit threes, and we're going to make Rondo hit threes. And that's a problem. And then if you have both of them on the court together, now you have one on three for LeBron if he's going to the hoop. And I'm going to live with those guys having to make those shots all day. And even Lance Stephenson, I think he's probably a little better three-point shooter. But again, you put all these guys in the game together, who's going to make those open shots? Because that's what happens a lot. LeBron goes to the hoop, everybody collapses, he kicks. Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, whoever has to make these open shots, these open threes, and now you've signed a bunch of guys who can't shoot and are actually the kind of playmakers that LeBron is. So now you have LeBron playmaking to playmakers, and then playmakers playmaking to LeBron. And I know LeBron is a much improved three-point shooter, but I'm guessing a lot of teams, if Lonzo Ball is taking the ball to the hoop, would rather have LeBron shooting a three than Lonzo attacking the basket. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the Lakers work this, and it worries me a little bit because you don't want to get to a point where these guys can't play together, because obviously if you're a Laker fan, if you're a Ball fan, you want Lonzo to develop, you want Lonzo to have his hands on the ball, and if he can't make a shot, then he doesn't really have a lot of value with LeBron James on the court, and we all know LeBron James is going to be on the court a lot. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this works with the Lakers, so that's what worries me a little bit. The other big piece of news is Carmelo Anthony signing with Houston, and if you've listened to this podcast before, you know that I am not in love with this version of Carmelo Anthony, to put it nicely. I think this is a terrible, terrible signing for Houston. Carmelo Anthony is slow. He doesn't defend. I mean, you talking about going from Trevor Ariza to Carmelo Anthony is one of the biggest downgrades of the three position you can have, probably in the entire NBA, just from the speed perspective, from the defending perspective. I mean, they had Trevor Ariza to guard Kevin Durant, and now you're trying to tell me that Carmelo is going to have to step in and guard Durant? I mean, that's embarrassing. There's no chance. Carmelo Anthony can't guard anybody. He's so slow, and he has this ego. I mean, he told OKC that he wouldn't come off the bench, and we talked about that in another episode where I'm like, how is that even his decision? And now he's going to Houston, who had the best record in the NBA, who have who play a game where the ball is in the hands of two players the majority of the time. And as soon as it passes to Carmelo, he's going to stop and he's going to jab step and back in and take his crap jumper. And it's just going to slow down everything they want to do. And I believe in my heart, if it didn't say Anthony on the back of his jersey and it just said random guy, that random guy probably wouldn't be in the NBA right now because his numbers were so bad last year, which is why they wanted to bring him off the bench, which is why he barely played in the playoffs, because he was awful. And to try to slot him in just because he has a name, to me, is one or two giant steps backward for Houston. I think they regress in a major way just because of that. Now, if he comes off the bench, if he plays 20 to 25 minutes a game as a role player and embraces that, could he have some value? Maybe, I would say, but I don't know. I think 10 years ago, he was one of the best scorers in the NBA, and now he has not embraced kind of what Vince Carter has done, where he said, you know what, I'm going to be a mentor, I'm going to take whatever role the coach gives for me and appreciate it. Carmelo still wants to be a superstar in the NBA, and he just isn't anymore. And Houston built something really good the last few years, and I really hope they don't lose it because of this Carmelo Anthony signing. So that's it as far as NBA news. Last night, Duke played their first preseason game, and we saw some big dunks from Zion Williamson. I think he is going to be really good. I'm really excited as a Duke fan to see them play this year. I think they are a big-time favorite to win it all this year. And, so if you haven't seen those highlights, he has a practice highlight where he dunks from the free throw line. He has a pretty big dunk in their game. I think it was a tip dunk. So anyway, if you haven't had a chance to check that out and you're a college basketball fan, check out the new toy for Mike Krzyzewski for sure. So let's move on to the analytics section. And I know the last couple episodes we haven't really talked numbers as much in analytics, but there's some things that I kind of think are important that I kind of want to talk about. And today I want to talk about evolving. And if you're listening to a coaching podcast right now, you are someone who is evolving, because coaching podcasts didn't exist 10 years ago. So you're ahead of the game right now just by listening to this or any podcast about something that you're trying to get better at, you know? So when I think about evolving, I think about, from the coaching perspective, learning every day, number one. Not being satisfied with what you did or what you have done. And I know that's a little cliche, but I'm serious. If play X, Y, and Z worked last year, then you need to implement play A, B, and C, because everyone's going to be prepping for X, Y, and Z. And if your defense was this and this last year, you need to tweak it to do this and this or that and that. And as a coach, you need to be evolving. How are you doing things? How can you become more efficient doing things? Film study. Are you better at film than you were last year? Everything in this world evolves. And a lot of people, and I'm going to stereotype, older people don't evolve. And you can even look at social media. You know, we can talk about going back to MySpace. Imagine if everyone was, if you, the basketball coach, were still on MySpace right now from 20 years ago or however long ago it was. Right? That means you haven't evolved. Then there was Facebook. And Facebook is kind of dying a little bit. But now there's Instagram, Snapchat, all these new things, and there's more, and in 5 years there's going to be a new one, and everyone's going to go to that one, and then there's going to be a new one. And that's the evolution of social media. And that's no different than the evolution of you as a coach or you as a person. You know, if you're not on Twitter, you haven't evolved. If you're, I'll give you guys a story. When I was coaching my first couple years as a college coach, the coach was older, and that's okay, and he was a good coach. And when we made game film, got game film, part of my job was to copy that film and record it onto a VHS. So we would get a DVD of our game burned, and then when we did film exchange, we would get a DVD, and then my job would be to burn it onto or record it onto a VHS. And then he would use that VHS to show our players. That was going backwards. We're talking about 8 years ago, and we're going back to VHS because he liked using the fast forward and the rewind button on the remote. So, you know, you couldn't cut it up. You couldn't, you know, there's just so many things. And so that's just one example of an older generation person not really evolving and just being satisfied with where he is. And I'm talking about in my daily life, in your daily life. We should all be evolving. There's so much new information. Think about what we knew 20 years ago. Think about what we knew 10 years ago. I mean, the math in sports, the analytics didn't even exist 10 years ago. 10 years ago, analytics basically did not exist. And now here we are in a world where if you're not using analytics, you're falling behind. It's just, it's not even the top of the top use it. Everybody uses it. It's standard now. If you're not using, you know, I mean, let's look at film. Before it was, when I was in college, when I graduated in 2003, we were lucky if we got a VHS that we could watch from another team. And then what happened? Then there was this film exchange at the college level where you had to email your opponents and see if they would send you a VHS or a DVD in the mail. And then all of a sudden there's Synergy and these other programs where it all is done for you. And so it's just evolving and evolving. And it's becoming, even film is becoming so at your fingertips. You know, the thought of emailing an opponent's opponent to try to get their film now is gone. It's done. Everything is out there. Everything is online. And that's the evolution of film. So as a coach, there needs to be an evolution in the way you coach. If you, it's not like being a school teacher where you have the same exact thing and every year you do the same exact assignments. If any of you guys have ever seen the movie Election with Matthew Broderick, he's a teacher and they just show the years going by and him writing the same diagrams on the board. And year by year, you can see him getting older, but he's still writing the same diagrams. That's just sometimes the way teaching school is because especially with a lot of history and stuff like that, or government. I think maybe he was a government teacher and he was teaching the judicial and all, you know, the three branches. And it's the same thing every year. Well, basketball is ever changing. Anything we knew 5 years ago was darn near obsolete. What we'll know in 10 years, what we look at today will be laughable. People, you know, I listened to some sports podcasts and somebody said that in 25 years, we'll look at a super team that will beat the Warriors by 30 every game, you know, because the guys will be able to shoot, but they'll all be 6'10", 6'11", or 7 foot, you know, just, and they'll be bigger and stronger. And it's just the evolution of life. So when you're coaching, you got to evolve. And that a lot of time means taking a look in the mirror and taking an honest look in the mirror and seeing what's working and what's not working. Because if you're running this play, you can look at it because we have the technology. You can look at it and you can see where it broke down. Why didn't it work? And now you can adjust to it. And that's your evolution right there. If you look it back and your team is middle of the pack on defense against the three-point line, go back and look at your film and see what the problem is. Why are our teams shooting the three ball good against you? If you're a zone team, maybe you can evolve to a matchup zone. Or if you're a matchup zone guy, maybe you can work in a 1-3-1. There's so many things you can do to evolve. And so much of it is online. You just research, just study. You know, I'm looking online just about every day, just trying to find new information, trying to learn something, try to become a little bit better coach every single day. Because if you're not, somebody else is. It's just like the old saying, you know. If you're not out there practicing, then somebody else is, and when they play against you, they're going to beat you. It's no different from any industry in the whole world. If you're not doing the most, then somebody else will, and they're going to beat you. In the strategy session today, I want to talk about something I like to do on the first day of practice, and I think it's really important, and it's getting defensive footwork down against a player with the ball. So a lot of people like to do shell drill, and that's fine. I'm not a huge shell drill fan because I think it's more of a going through the motions. And I think a lot of shell drills, you go under screens, and at our level, you're almost never going under screens. So to me, it's kind of a exercise in futility, or an exercise that doesn't really have any benefit. But what I like to do is I'll put guys on the perimeter, and it's actually a really slow drill, and I tell the guys that. And I'll usually do it after we've done some running, so it kind of gives them a quick little break. But I'll put every guy on the perimeter, offense versus defense, and have them square up their guy while he has the ball. And then the other guys will be in their help side positions. And this is not a moving drill. This is what I want them to learn as a base. And especially for those of you who are high school coaches, getting that base is really important. And I don't think that it's a big time waste to take some time, even at the college level, to do this at the beginning of the year. So what I'll do is, it's just like a shell, but the ball's not going to move. And we're going to have each guy, and I'm going to walk around, I'm going to take my time. And I'm going to tell guys where they should be. And the most important part of that is where the guy on the ball is. I firmly believe that if you are in the correct position on the ball, depending on your coaching strategy, and no matter what the coaching strategy is, that doesn't really matter. You need to have your guys guard the ball in the proper position for how you want to guard with your whole concept. I hope that makes sense. Me personally, I like to shade baseline. I don't like to force baseline because I don't want to use help. And we can talk about that some other time. But I want to shade baseline. And what that means is I want to force guys to the short corner. And I know that's not reinventing the wheel. I know everybody wants to do that. But a lot of guys, especially when they close out, or even if they're just guarding the ball, they'll have their feet slightly in the wrong position. And that little tiny quarter step or quarter inch, and that guy's beat one direction or the other. So what I do is, like I said, I'll put four or five guys on the perimeter, probably five in the normal positions, corners, wings, and top. And I'll have them stand, and then I'll adjust their feet. And it's to get to that exact position where you cannot get beat baseline and you cannot get beat to the middle. And if you're slightly too high on your offensive player, then he's going to beat you baseline every time. And I'll ask the offensive guy, because I want them to recognize things too. I want them to recognize what good defensive position is, and I also want them to recognize when they have an opportunity to beat somebody. So I'll say, which way can you beat him? Where should you go? And sometimes he'll be like, oh, I can beat him baseline right now. And I'll look at the defender and I'll say, look, do you see that? Because usually they're right. And I'll adjust their feet. Maybe sometimes it's closing their stance off a little bit. And sometimes it's moving them a little higher or a little lower. Because if you're too low on your man, and I hope you guys know what too low means, let's pretend, I'll try to explain it as best I can over talking. Let's pretend we're on the wing. The high side is him going to the middle, the offensive player. Right? So let's say you're facing the basket and you're on the left wing. So the going high side on your defender means you're beating him to the middle. And beating him to the low side is beating him baseline. Okay? So if I say the defender is too high, that means he's too high on the body of the offensive player, which means he's giving away the baseline. And if he's too low, then that means his upper foot, his foot closest to half court, is not just outside of the offensive player. And so now that offensive player can take one dribble middle and he's beat. So what you want to do, and if you're shading baseline, which is what I like to do, I like my defender to just be just outside the upper foot, the high foot on the offensive player. And what we'll do is I'll say, hey, take one hard dribble. And if you're just on the high side as a defender, then his one dribble has to go horizontally, which is what we want. He can't get that foot past your foot, and then he's by you. He has to go horizontally, and you take that one hard step, and you've stopped him. And then for the low side, you want to be close enough and not too high that he can't just get by you with one hard dribble. So you're in that position where you're just above him on the high side, but still right in front of him. So when he takes that hard first dribble baseline, you're right there, and you're chest to chest with him, and now you've stopped him. Because I believe that that first dribble is everything. Because once a guy dribbles, he loses all that edge of that first long step he can take to get by you. So I'm a big proponent of getting the footing right so you can stop that first dribble, because once that first dribble's done, you've got him, and now you've stopped him. And look, I'm 6'8". When I was playing professionally, when I was playing in summer pro leagues, I'm guarding 6'3 guys. I'm guarding athletic, really athletic guys. And when I play in summer pro leagues, I'm playing the two at 6'8". Because, you know, we got 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", or whatever we had on our teams. And so I'm guarding these little guards, and I got to be able to stay in front of them. And I took a lot of pride in my positioning of my feet and being able to stop that one hard dribble. Because once you stop that first hard dribble, I've got him. And I used to say that. I used to go, I was probably a little cocky back then, but I used to say no. They take that hard dribble, I'd be like, nope. And then they try to go back the other way, I go, nope, like that. And that was it. I stopped him. And, you know, usually it's two hard steps because, you know, you play with a shot clock, you play, when you know, you're not in the NBA, no one's taking 6-7 dribbles. You know, you're getting, you have a chance to try to beat your guy, one, two hard dribbles, you don't beat him, it's time to kick it to somebody else and you know, try something else. So that's why I think it's so important to have that positioning down. And then what you want to do is have your guys rotate so they can get in the right positions for all of those spots. And then guys who are on the weak side, you know, you can put them in their help side positions. And of course, help side, there's so many factors to help side. How good the shooter is, how dominant the guy on the ball is. So, but you just want to have a general idea, you know, and you tell the guys, look, this is where we're gonna put you when you're one pass away, when you're two passes away. But this is not exactly where you stand. Every single situation is going to be a little different, and they need to know that. Because I don't want them saying 2 weeks later, well, this is where I'm supposed to stand. No, that's the best shooter over there. You gotta cheat out one or two steps, you know? Oh, this guy over here, he's not a driver. You can cheat out one or two steps because you know you won't have to step over and help. Oh, they got a big time post player here. Yeah, you got to cheat all the way over because we basically want to not let them throw the ball into the post. So there's tons of little factors that are going to affect where you're going to be in the help side. But you can still have the guys stand in the approximate range for the median guy, for the average player, and then adjust accordingly based on personnel. So I really recommend, you know, taking some time. And then maybe a couple days later, go back to that. Or work it in with some closeouts. Because obviously that's not a standstill game. And they need to be able to get into that exact position while they're moving. You know, it's very rare that they're going to be just standing in front of the defender and someone's going to pass it. They're either going to be jumping over, like, because the ball got passed to their guy. They're going to be closing out. They're going to be rotating. It's almost never going to be just from a standstill. So they're going to have to work on getting to that exact position while they're moving. But I think it's a really good base to start there. You know, obviously, you want to build a good foundation when you're building anything. So you want to start with them being standing still so that once they're moving, they know where that spot is. And they can start to feel where that sweet spot is because they'll be able to stop those guys on that one dribble. Or the guy won't even drive. He'll just square him up, maybe jab step, and then see, oh man, I have no advantage, and kick the ball. And then there's a win for that guy right there. There's a win because he didn't attack. There's a win because he took two dribbles, wasted 5 seconds off the shot clock, and then ended up dribbling back out and kicking the ball. That's a good win for that defender right there. And so that's what you want to have those guys have that base to know where that spot is on their guy, so they can take away that first dribble and that second dribble. So that's all for today. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.